No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. On the line, I've got Seth Cox, and this is not the happiest of podcast episodes today, recording on a Tuesday night, because this is the NFC Championship aftermath show. Carson Palmer laid an egg, Arizona Cardinals laid an egg, and they got boat raced by the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, as bad as last year's loss was to the Panthers, this year's was almost worse because they were, you know, they had their full deck of cards. 49-15 is the final score, and the Cardinals are not super. They are not Super Bowl bound. Their season is over in shockingly bad fashion. And now the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton and a very, very, very good Carolina Panthers team is headed to the Super Bowl to play Peyton Manning. Seth and I are here to talk about the aftermath of this game. You know, some would like to start talking. I'm not ready. We're not ready, Seth. And welcome to the show, as always, Seth. How are you doing?
You know, trying to figure out what happened.
So. Yeah, I'm personally not ready to talk off-season yet. That, and if we were to talk, react to the game, talk about a little bit the Super Bowl and the off-season, I think we'd be on the show for 3 hours and... You know, I'm generous to think that anyone's actually listening for the first past the first 15 minutes of the show anyway, so.
I think they listen. I just think that everything I'm going to say is going to make too many people mad.
So this is the plan tonight. We're going to talk about we're going to react to the game. That's essentially what we're doing. What went wrong? We're going to talk about our feelings about it and really sort of get the last bit of this last season off our chest before we hit, and I think next week we'll throw together an off-season show where we'll talk about the needs and this and that, and it shows, at least in our listener stats, that we're getting a lot more listens than we used to, so maybe we'll have a few other shows in the off-season that we've done before. I already know that I actually had a player, one of the guys, these young guys that just signed with the Cardinals on the future contract, just messaged me the other day and was requesting that I do a write-up on him, and I'll gladly do that, and I think I'll be able to get him on a podcast episode, so I'll be able to get him on the horn, and if I can do that for at least a few shows in the off-season, that might make for something interesting to pass the long, disappointing off-season, since... You know, it was just shocking. I was on NPR today on the show, recorded a spot with them locally, and they asked me if it was how surprising or shocking or disappointing. I'm not surprised the Cardinals lost because Carolina's dang good. So it wasn't beyond the fact that it wasn't beyond me that the Cardinals were going to lose, because that was definitely always on the table. That's how they lost, and so. It was shocking and disappointing, but it wasn't surprising that they lost. It was just the way that they lost. But what are your feelings on that? It's like, how surprised, how disappointing was the loss to you?
I think you hit it on the head. It's just a shocking outcome. The fact that you had so many players either quit or look like they quit or... looked like the moment it was too big for them. You know, there was so much that happened, and it was really disheartening and surprising in the sense of I did not see that coming at all. You know, you and I talked about it before. I thought the Panthers were going to win. I thought it was going to be a field goal game, and the Panthers were just going to get the benefit of home field and get the ball, you know, the last time down the field and end up kicking a field goal to win. I did not think that the Carolina Panthers were going to put up 50 points on the Arizona Cardinals, and the Arizona Cardinals were going to struggle to get the ball past the 50-yard line. So that was quite shocking for most, you know, to be completely honest.
And I don't know what it was for me. It's just I had, while I thought it was possible, and it didn't surprise me that they lost, I was so in my head bought into the fact that this is a championship team and said, there's no way after the way they came out against Green Bay that they're going to do that again against Carolina. They would be super focused. They weren't. It was like they had never experienced postseason football. The whole revenge factor of going back to Carolina, I was shocked at just how seemingly unprepared they were for everything about that game, whether it was their focus, unprepared for just how intensely ready and focused that Carolina was, because they ran into a buzzsaw of a team in Carolina, and they just took it to them. And we got, you know, there at the very end, we even got a little bit of Bruce Arians medicine, as, you know, they went for two after scoring their, you know, their sixth touchdown. For some reason, they went for two, and yeah, that's almost Bruce Arians like in the way he would, you know, pile it on, or say against that St. Louis game, the game's already in hand and he's still throwing a bomb down the field to John Brown to kind of close things out.
Yeah, it was just, it was disappointing, shocking, all of the above. I don't know. I just the fact that it ended so quickly, like it was basically over at halftime.
Yeah.
Right? Like after the Peterson interception, and, you know, you got back down, and I think they were down 17 at that point, and you said to yourself, all right, worst case scenario, they're down 14 going in the half. Defense will get refocused and, you know, everything. And then first play or second play, it was another interception. You go, that really just happened.
It's like, wait, what? And we're going to talk about Carson Palmer, definitely, because there was lots of things to talk about when it comes to Carson Palmer. But, you know, to me, if we're going to talk about, how much was it the Panthers being good or the Cards being bad? It was the worst of both worlds. It was a really, really good Carolina team and just the worst Cardinals team that could have shown up. And think about it this way. Here's just a little bit of food for thought. Last year's Cardinals, which set an NFL record for offensive ineptitude, scored more points than this juggernaut Cardinals offense in the playoff game on Sunday.
And what ends up happening is something that you and I talked about off the air, and something I've kind of tweeted about since the game. And, you know, I don't want to say I was the first one that said this, but I think I was the first person that said this. This is this Cardinals team was basically a watered down version of the 2013 Denver Broncos, right? Like, Peyton Manning sets the NFL record for passing touchdowns. They have 3 1,000-yard receivers. You know, they break scoring records and yardage records, and it's like, man, this is the greatest offense we've ever seen. And then they play against a Seattle defense
team.
Yeah, that's very similar to the Carolina defense the Cardinals just played, and it was like, holy cow, they got punched in the face. And, you know, it was almost like, you know, a fight, and you get punched in the face and your nose is broken, and yeah, you might be faster and quicker, and you know, maybe you'll land a punch, but they punched them in the face, and then they stood back and watched the blood drip, and then they just said, yeah, let's just keep going, and just kept punching them. And they basically took out, and this was an unfortunate thing for the Cardinals, they basically took out all the crap that they had to listen to for the last 6 weeks, since the New York Giants game, I think it was about 6 weeks ago, when they gave up that 35-0 lead, and then they did it again, and you know, and they struggled against New Orleans, and then they did it again in their first playoff game against Seattle, where they, you know, get out to this massive lead, and then they just let the other team back in, and they basically said, "F you guys, we're not doing that." Like, we're not just going to step on your throat. We're going to stab you there too. Like, this was just a beating. And honestly, like, if you told me that the Cardinals were going to lose by, you know, almost 40, I would have laughed at you. Like, there's absolutely no way. If you told me the Cardinals were going to lose by 2 touchdowns, I would have had a hard time believing it. Like, if you said they were going to lose 35-21, I'd be like, no, that's too much. Like, they're not that bad. And yet in that game, they were not just that bad, they were worse.
And it was this team, what it was so atypical of everything that they had done all year up until week 17. They were resilient. They moved the ball. They looked like, you know, overall, when you're looking at the big picture, they look like how they played down the stretch last season when they were just worn out, or how they played in the first half of 2013, a team, or even at the end of 2012, just a team that, every characteristic of what they were veteran, they were smart, they were efficient, they were resilient, they lost all of that. And he even saw composures again, like Calais Campbell having to get in the face of Ed Stinson, Marcus Gold losing it on the bench with one of his coaches. I mean, what is going on? That wasn't an issue all season. They didn't know how to handle that. I can't explain how so much bad, because, you know, Grant, it wasn't, Carson Palmer did not play well at all, but it was almost every important player that was needed. And holy cow, the league has got themselves a monster of a player in Cam Newton.
Yeah, I mean, it was just basically, I think the wind went out of the sails on the Peterson fumble, the muff punt, and I think then they made the play on defense, you know, to stop Carolina from scoring there, and it was a terrible throw from Cam, and I think everybody was kind of like, okay, that'll kind of turn the tide, you know, here it goes. And then I feel like, as much as, you know, you don't want to put it on one play or one thing, I think the fact that Palmer threw an interception right after that was just backbreaking.
It was exactly like the Ryan Lindley interception last year is what it did to the team. When he got picked off, and they were in the red zone, and he gets picked off by Kuechly there in front of Fitz, it had that sort of effect. It just kind of made everything tumble down.
Yeah, and it just, I think it went over to the defense. You know, they hadn't played well, but I think it was only 24-7 at that point. And, you know, they had worked on a couple short fields, and it was at that point, it was like, I think the defense, as much as anybody else, saw the writing on the wall there of there's nothing that we can do at this point. And I just think that the combination, and I think that was the most disappointing part, is that, you know, if Carson Palmer sucks in this game, which he did, I don't think that I don't think that the rest of the team can quit. And that's kind of what happened, right? Like, the rest of the team, I don't want to say quit, because that's just a connotation of, you know, I can't get into because I'm not in the locker room and I don't know. But from afar, you know, from an outside perspective, it didn't seem like the effort was there after that interception was thrown. Like, it was kind of a foregone conclusion. I mean, the Panthers came out and went on a 7.5-minute drive to start the third quarter. Like, there's got to be a sense of urgency there. I mean, I would have been okay with a big play touchdown by the Panthers, but the fact that they just methodically went down the field and basically said, I dare you guys to stop us. And the Cardinals went, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I can start golfing tomorrow. You know, maybe I don't want to stop you. That's gonna be a lot of work. I know that's not what they were doing, but that's what it seemed like. Like, you're in the NFC Championship game, you're down by 17, and this team is just, you know, jaunting down the field over a 7.5-minute drive when you need the ball and points in the worst way. And I just feel like that interception basically told everybody, like, it's over. Like, there's nothing we can do. Oh, we'll get the ball back to him, but, you know, he's going to throw another interception. And I felt like that's where it went to. And I think that's what's most disappointing, because, like I said, I can take the fact that Palmer sucked. I can't take the fact that everybody else basically gave up because he sucked.
And that's... That's the thing, is it seems so atypical, just completely against everything that we saw from Arizona all year, or maybe how they could lose faith in Palmer so quickly with what he did for them during the season. I don't know. So what would they? Almost to me, it looked like they just weren't ready. They did not think, you know. And BA talked about it. The beginning of that game, especially with Carolina, keeping them from getting out ahead early is crucial, because they play on emotion, they play on passion. When they get ahead, they, you know, at least for a first half, they will just stomp on you. You know, they had the games where they let up, but that was later in the game when they sort of know they just have to run the clock out. But I don't know what it was. They didn't look ready for the intensity on the field. Maybe they've bought too much in themselves. Maybe they bought the fact that Carolina, maybe they thought they weren't as good as they were. But it looked like there was a lot of unpreparedness. Like the secondary, which had been the strength of the defense, bought into the fact that Carolina's receivers weren't any good, and as a result, didn't take them seriously. I mean, when was the last time we saw Patrick Peterson legitimately beaten on any sort of route? And we saw it from Ted Ginn.
And that's what I'm saying. It just felt weird. Like, it felt off, and like the team didn't, I don't want to say didn't care, because I know they cared, but it just felt like the moment was too big for them. And, you know, when you say something like that and you talk about that, and, you know, I hate saying this, but that stems from the leadership, right? And maybe not the coach, but when the moment seems too big for your quarterback and your team captain, that kind of trickles down, and that's what it kind of seemed like to me. I don't know how you felt, but it just seemed like the moment seemed like it was too big for everybody there, and you know, I think you take cues from your leadership, and you know, Carson Palmer, you know, obviously did not play well. Larry Fitzgerald was dropping passes. On defense, like you said, Patrick Peterson not doing well. Calais Campbell was, you know, basically invisible.
He was invisible.
And then you had rookies trying to do too much. I mean, Marcus Golden looked like he didn't belong on the field. You know, Deion Buchanan was basically erased for the entire game because, you know, as good as he is in the box, all of a sudden you're going up against a power team, and you know, he can't function as well in the box because, let's face it, he only weighs 210 pounds. And you know, you got Kevin Minter, who I think I remember talking about it with the people I was watching the game with. I was like, oh, Kevin Minter finally made a play. Like, there was one play, and it was just an odd situation. And you know, like I said, I don't think any of us saw this coming now. But you know, maybe if we're honest with ourselves, and you know, I asked this question on Twitter, and I don't think it matters because nobody really wanted to talk about it. But I think week 17 actually meant a lot. Like, nobody wanted to talk about it, but week 17 should have been like the wake up call. Like, this team has a lot of flaws, and it starts up front on both sides of the ball. And I, you know, you and I have talked about it before, but the Cardinals front seven on defense is nothing to write home about. And then offensively, the offensive line, outside of, you know, Mike Iupati and maybe Jared Valdir, is really just not very good. And you know, if you struggle in the box, it you know, even though it's the passing league and blah, 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 you look at the two teams in the Super Bowl, and they both have dominant front sevens on defense. So I don't know. Maybe that should be a focus, you know, in our next podcast.
Week 17, while we thought it was an aberration, I did too, because it broke them. It's like the Cardinals broke that week because they had so much confidence and had been playing so well for so long. And then in week 17, it was like it didn't matter. And they didn't know how to get that rhythm back. For some reason, you know, we can look at a couple of things. There's the, and we'll talk the finger, Carson Palmer's finger. We'll talk about that in a second. I think it became kind of, on the defensive side of the ball, kind of evident to me how important Tyrann Mathieu is to that defense, not just in terms of ability and his flexibility and his dynamism on the field, but the heart with which he plays, that vocal leader on the field. You didn't have the primal shouts and yells from the Badger making plays on the field and getting everyone fired up. Patrick Peterson's a great player. He doesn't fire up his teammates. Calais Campbell, he's the one who kind of takes that role, but he's not the nasty player out there. He, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's like the Cardinals broke in week 17 and never could get it back. They didn't know how to get back on track. And it looked, you thought they were going to do it after that's the second half against Green Bay, but it's like the train came off the track and they couldn't ever get it right.
Yeah, like I said, I think it, and you know, I don't want to, because honestly, like, I don't know what happened, so you can't say too much, but it just felt like it was a cluster from the beginning, and it kind of goes back to what we talked about, leadership. Like you said, the defense was infighting and things of that nature, but the offense, like, had nothing, and the two leaders on the offense, you know, are Arians and Palmer, and I don't know, you know, I don't want to say that the moment was too big for Bruce Arians, but I you know, we definitely know that the moment looked too big for Carson Palmer, just by, you know, the decisions he made and the pressure he felt like he had to, you know, make the plays and just couldn't do it.
So let's start with our Carson Palmer talk. So we got so much to talk about when it comes to Palmer, especially with all the hot takes coming out on Twitter. Oh my gosh. I could not believe the things that I was seeing on social media about Palmer. This is a guy who set, this is quite literally, was the best quarterback season any player has ever had for this franchise in its long, long history. Name a record, he set it. He set a record for passing yards. He set a record for passer rating. He set a record for touchdowns. He set a record for, you know, for wins. Then if you look at the other part, look, Carson Palmer and his interceptions, you know, Carson Palmer now holds the two lowest interception percentages in franchise history. This year was the second. Last year was the first one. I you know, he barely threw, I mean, with the six games, obviously he threw enough to make it in the record book, but how quickly everyone turned on him. Now, first, Let's talk about playoff Carson Palmer. Is there something to that? Do you think that there's something to the whole playoff thing with Carson?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think that if you look over his stats, and I pulled them up, and you know,
essentially it's three games. We can't even talk about the one pass he threw against Pittsburgh in 05. And so you've got 09, and you've got Green Bay and Carolina.
So, funny enough, and I don't know what your thought was, Green Bay was his best career playoff game. You know, three touchdowns, his only multi-touchdown game in the playoffs. One touchdown was luck, obviously. The second Michael Floyd touchdown. Yes. The first Michael Floyd touchdown was one of the better throws that Carson Palmer made all season. I mean, that's what confuses me about the finger, but we can get to that later. And then, you know, the third one is a shovel pass, but let's be honest, it was a running play, you know, like, so, but he threw two interceptions, we know that. And then his next best game was in 09 against the Jets, and he was really fairly abysmal.
Yeah, it was, you know, 50% passing, a touchdown, a pick.
150 yards. Like, I mean, just basically, you know, very, very blasé, so to speak. And then we had, you know, the kind of the meltdown of Sunday. And so you look at the playoffs and you look at, you know, the passer rating and everything else. And I think when you look at the numbers and you just look at the overall performance, I think what obviously stands out is the fact that even if you take out the anomaly of the four interception game, right, because seven interceptions is a lot in three games, but if you take out the anomaly of four interception game, he's still, you know, basically going to throw two interceptions a playoff game. Now, granted, that's only in two games, but I think what it is, and you know, I'd love to research it a little more and put some more time into it, but you go through the season. Yeah, you can kind of do it right now. You can go through the season, and against Seattle, he threw one interception. Green Bay threw one interception. Minnesota, he didn't throw one. Cincinnati, he threw two. Seattle, he threw one. Pittsburgh, he threw two. And those were the playoff teams they played. And what was the, you know, commonality in all of those? He threw at least one interception. So all of a sudden, you know, you look at Palmer and the fact that, you know, logically thinking that you're going to play good teams in the playoffs, he plays good teams, and all of a sudden he struggles. I think that's fair, because when you look at Palmer the player overall, you have a very good quarterback in a specific system, in Bruce Arians' system, but he's not a transcendent player, right? Like, you're not going to put him up against even Cam Newton and say, oh, let me have Palmer all day, every day. And I think that's where the confusion lies. People want Palmer, the playoff quarterback, to be Palmer, the regular season quarterback. And outside of the four interceptions, because like I said, that's an anomaly. He basically is, because whenever he plays playoff teams, he presses and makes mistakes. The difference in a lot of those games was he was able to correct those mistakes throughout the game. In this game, it just kind of snowballed, like you talked about at the beginning. Like, you know, it is much like the Seattle game in week 17. You know, let's be honest, if they don't pull him, he probably is going to throw another pick. I mean, he only played a half and he threw an interception. He's probably going to throw another pick in that game if they continue to play him. So it's just one of those things. When a team like Carolina gets ahead and can play from ahead and force you to play faster than you're ready to, and make throws in small windows with pressure around you, you're going to struggle. And honestly, we've seen that from Palmer in all the games. This just happened to be one that highlighted it and put an exclamation point next to it, and then it was sealed and stamped as this is who he is. And honestly, it is who he is. I think, like I said, I think the four interceptions is the anomaly part, but he's just, you know, against really good teams, he presses and he makes bad plays. And that's expected because he's not, you know, an elite quarterback in the sense of, you know,
as a career guy, he's never been elite.
And you even look at this year, and like you said, he set every record possible for the Arizona Cardinals. When you put his 2015 season in the scope of quarterback play in time, I mean, I'd have to look, but is it even a top 25 performance, statistically speaking? And that's not a knock at all, like that, because like you said, this was an amazing season in Cardinals lore for him specifically. But that's just the reality of the age of the passing and things of that nature. And so I think we look at it, you know, and it was an unfortunate reality that it happened in a game of this magnitude, and obviously in an elimination game. But it, you know, like I said, the four interceptions is an aberration, but his pressing, his trying to make plays, that's who he is, and that's who he's always going to be. And that's kind of what I said earlier. They're going to have to find a way to build around that to overcome that, as opposed to go with the, oh, we need more weapons. Get Carson more weapons to throw to.
For me, I still don't, you know, when you've got a guy that's had basically a couple of shots in the playoffs over many years, I have a hard time saying that he's a playoff choker or he's a bad playoff quarterback. However, I think what I got caught up with is the season that he had and believing that was the guy, when Carson Palmer has always been, and it, you know, the way they built this team was in kind of his career, and I've described him like this: when the Cardinals got him and he had that first season, he is an elite quarterback talent who's had an above average career for whatever reason. And unlike, he is one who can't, he's never been a guy that makes the team that much better by himself. You take Peyton Manning off the Colts, they turned into a two-win team. You take Carson Palmer off of this team this year, they are probably a 500 team, give or take, thereabouts. And so I see Carson Palmer. I hate to put, you know, with a small sample size, because when you look at the scope of his career, this really is a small sample size to say that he's not a big game quarterback, especially since we saw him play so well in a ton of big games this season, games that mattered. But it's almost as if we all forgot that. Why did he have the season that he had? It's because of the system they placed around him, in terms of protection, in terms of he's comfortable in the scheme, an offense that maximizes his skill set and the skill players, and forgot that he was the guy that threw 22 interceptions just two seasons ago, and threw, what, 14 of those in the first eight games.
Yeah, and you even look at, you know, last year in six games, I think, seven games, six games, I don't remember. You know, it was
he was playing more game manager like last year, because he wasn't taking the shots down the field with consistently like he is this year. Year one, he was lost most of the year. And he was checking down. Even last year, he was playing very game managerish in many ways. He wasn't taking as many shots. He was being better with them. And then this year, almost the short game was almost gone. And it was intermediate throw, intermediate throw, intermediate throw, deep pass.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we can kind of get to this now, and the asinineness of the conversation that's had and whatever. So people are suggesting moving on from Palmer, whatever. And anybody that has listened to the show or followed me since, 2013 when they grabbed Palmer knows I'm not necessarily one of the Palmer believers. I'm not a guy that looks at Palmer and goes, yeah, this is finally right. Like, I've never thought that, but I've thought that in this scheme he has worked well and he's done well in the offense as they've grown into, Michael Floyd's grown and John Brown's grown and Larry Fitzgerald is still great and yada yada yada. But let's get this straight right now. There are two quarterbacks in all of football that can walk into this team and take the Cardinals further or are better fits than Carson Palmer in 2016. And unfortunately, they play for the Indianapolis Colts and Pittsburgh Steelers. Bruce Arians' offense is incredibly difficult. He's not going to change that offense at all. And so the quarterback that comes in is going to have to work within that offense. We've seen how that works. Just look at the 22 interceptions Palmer threw in 2013. Look at the 21 interceptions, I think it is, that Andrew Luck threw in 2012. His system is not easy to pick up. So the only two quarterbacks that are an upgrade in 16 over Palmer are guys that are not, you're not able to get. So this idea that you can replace him or draft somebody, whatever. It's 2016 is a lost cause if you get rid of Palmer. They may make the playoffs, whatever. They're not going any further than they went this year. I'm just saying that right now. And I'm not a Palmer believer. I'm not a guy that's going to sit up here and say, oh, he's going to come back no problem. And, it was just a fluke. And I think it was an anomaly, an aberration. But that's kind of who he is. He's a gambler. He's a guy that struggles in tight windows and big games. And it's just been kind of his career, and he just didn't get a chance to make it up this time. But also, he's their best answer for 2016.
And the question as to, Cardinals fans bailing on Palmer saying, they'll never win. There's no way that he can be a championship quarterback. That hyperbole is absurd to me. When you have a Joe Flacco, who now has a ring, and wasn't with a dominant defense, Joe Flacco won a championship. If Joe Flacco can do it, Carson Palmer can do it. I don't know if he will, but to jump off and say Carson Palmer isn't a champ, Carson Palmer can be. He has the skill set, and I think I mentioned Carson Palmer in big games. We saw it. We'll look at the biggest games that he played, at least that were personally, emotionally amped up. You got Carolina, you've got the Green Bay playoff game, and you've got Cincinnati. There were other big games. The one exception that was like the biggest game was it was against Seattle, in Seattle, and he was so good from the start. But these other games that had an emotional charge to them, he was erratic early. And he seemed to be, and from what you see, he's a quarterback who isn't. He has to kind of remain calm. This California, he has to remain within himself and then plays well. And against Cincinnati and against Green Bay, he was able to bring himself down, to settle in. This Carolina game never allowed him to settle in because they were down early. he had the adversity, but never could pearl it around, because then after that he was pressing. So okay, I have to make this throw. I have to make this throw, even if it doesn't work. So I have to take extra risks, and that's to me is worth it. So, but the notion to me that they'll never win a championship if Carson Palmer's here, I think that's just absurd. They can do it. They can do it. I don't know if they will, but the team as constructed, if they had played better from the start, they could be looking. But that's the thing. It wasn't just Palmer. A lot of things fell apart.
And honestly, because we've seen it in, you know, three games this year and then four, including the playoffs, and let's be honest, five, including the Green Bay game, I don't think they can win a championship as constructed. Because I think it – and again, this goes back to the 2013 Broncos thing. I think it relies too much on one guy, and that's unfair to Palmer, but that's how they've constructed the team. I think it relies too much on one guy being great, and it allows everybody else just to play at a good level, but it expects Palmer to do great things. And when he's not great, you know, we saw Green Bay, he wasn't great, and then obviously we saw Carolina. That's not a fair thing, right? Like, you can't go Carson Palmer, dude who has won one playoff game and, you know, thrown seven interceptions in three playoff games, go win us a Super Bowl. You know, no, what you have to do is you have to look at this team and go, we have to get better in the trenches. That doesn't just mean along the front five of the offensive line and the front three of the defensive line. It means, you know, your left side, I feel like your left side is, you know, that left side is as good as Carolina's left side. You can't tell me anything otherwise. Like, I just don't see how a journeyman left tackle in Michael Oher and a undrafted free agent in 2014 are better than an all-pro in Mike Iupati and, you know, a guy that
borderline metrics, Pro Bowler, you know.
Yeah, and the metrics love in Jared Valdir. I just, you can't tell me that. I'm sorry, you cannot. Their center is elite, yes. Their right guard is elite, yes. But you can't tell me that their two elite players at center and right guard are, you know, that much more elite than Iupati and Valdir. Anyways, so you have to get better. Hopefully that comes in the form of two of your last three first-round picks in Jonathan Cooper and DJ Humphreys. I think that starts there. On the other side, I think you have to get better at all front seven spots. And this was going to be kind of my thought with Deion Buchanan, because I thought he was very good in the role he played this year as a linebacker. I think he'll be even better if he's used in more of a Cam Antler role as a true strong safety that plays in the box as opposed to a linebacker, you know, that's it.
So like now, a two-way play, would that be, so you'd have him play like a Ty Matthews. So Ty and yes. Deion are the starting safeties, and then when they go nickel, they both go to their dollar and their slot, and then you have two other safeties playing up top.
Yeah, exactly, and that's how I would. That's just what I think they need to do. Because here's the other thing: you have to find a way to stop the run when it's bleeding like that. And as good as Deion Buchanan is, he's still 210 pounds or 15 pounds, whatever he is. That's a lot to ask him to do from 5 yards off the line of scrimmage. Go ahead.
No, I was bringing more Palmer type things. There's another point that people were saying. Troy Aikman even alluded to it. The joke where he went. You know, even you said it. He went full Jake Delhomme, and you never want to go for the full Delhomme. You know, Palmer actually out Delhomme'd Delhomme in some ways with the play that him. But they're saying that you don't recover from that. That's another thing that you know. I don't see being an issue, because in part, Jake Delhomme, if you look at the two career arcs, Jake Delhomme was the quarterback talent to begin with. You know, Carson Palmer, if you look at his career, is an unfulfilled, for the most part, unfulfilled with his career achievement compared to the talent he has at the position. So he was a number one pick overall. And he's got the mental makeup. He's got the smarts. He's got the body. He's got the arm strength. He's got the ability, and he's got the demeanor. He just has been unfulfilled. I personally is seeing this, and I you know, going to like the whole playoff quarterback play, I almost can take a look at this season at calling it his first real experience with the playoffs. And I know that's a little unfair to do, but you look how long ago his other postseason was. He had two plays in 2005, and he had one game in 2009. That's a long, well, I guess it was the 2010 is when they played. It was after the 2009 season. So that was 6 years ago in one game, you know, a lifetime ago, essentially, in his NFL career, because that's how long ago it seems that he was with the Bengals, a lifetime ago. He didn't play in the playoffs last year. He got the thing, you know, it was unfinished business. He saw the type of team that they had and the talent they believed in. He came back stronger than ever. He experiences adversity in the playoffs. I do not see him folding like a Matt Schaub. I do not see him folding up like Jake Delhomme. I believe he will bounce back and come back playing very well next year. I'm not going to say he's going to play at the same level he did all this year. I do not see this as being a stumbling block for him, but a stepping stone. And I think if they can make the playoffs next year, I think he will bounce back because of this experience. And you know, playoff Carson Palmer is a narrative that comes because of the length of time and the sample size that there was between experiences.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's also unfair to expect him to do the same thing again next year, right? Because
I mean
that was a career year for a reason, and he'll be 36, you know, most of next year, 37 in the year, and head into the playoffs, and you know, it's just, even Tom Brady and Peyton Manning have slowed down to an extent. I mean, let's not just say to an extent. They've slowed down, you know, as they've aged. And
Peyton Manning was using his smarts in anticipation. Look at Tom Brady. His deep ball's awful. His deep ball's bad now. And he's checking down and getting rid of the ball fast. And he makes some nice intermediate to some short deep passes to Gronkowski that are fantastic. But he kills you with his early quick passing attack.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say is, you know, they revamped the offense and they made it a more short-based passing attack. And then, you know, their real deep threat, as you said, is Gronk. And, you know, you look at Denver and they've basically become a defense, ball control, don't make any mistakes, and you know, and take shots when you can type team, and you know, and I'm not sure that's in Arians or Palmer's personality to do, right? Like, I don't know if that's even in their vocabulary or their persona. So it's going to be interesting to see, because you know, I'm not in the weird section that's like, oh, you'll never win a Super Bowl with, you know, Carson Palmer as your quarterback. I'm more in the sense of you can't win a Super Bowl with the team constructed as is, relying on Carson Palmer to be the reason you win the Super Bowl.
And that's where you end up with teams, you know, look at the way the Cowboys have relied on Tony Romo. Look at the way the Colts relied so much on Peyton Manning. You know, you could say when it comes to playing the quarterback position, you could say Tom Brady's had the better career. But when you look at the quarterback position, I don't think anyone changed the quarterback position as much as Peyton Manning did. And when you had in these dudes that were so reliant on them because they were so great, they're great at their position. You expect them to, you know, step up in lieu of other positions. And the Cardinals looked like they were trying to build that to, you know, the safety net for Carson Palmer. And then this year, you know, he played out of his mind. And everything sort of fell on that. And when the other side of the ball couldn't handle things or there was any sort of adversity with Palmer, they weren't able to do it.
Yeah, and like I said, it reminded me so much of that 13 Broncos, because you look at it, and, you know, that offense was clearly better than this offense. But it was the same thing. I mean, Peyton Manning, they lived and died by Peyton Manning, and, you know, we all remember the Super Bowl. And I think that goes back to...
And that Super Bowl went the same way. Peyton Manning, they had adversity early, and they never were able to get in sync. There was a moment where you thought that they would have it happen, and then it didn't. And it would, then they had the turnover, and he never got settled. And it happened. It's a perfect example, because the Seattle-Denver Super Bowl went exactly the way the Cardinals-Panthers game went. When there was a moment you thought, okay, they're going to get back in this, and then done.
And not just that, but it made the Broncos completely, and this is something we can talk about another time, but it made the Broncos completely change their philosophy, right? The next season, they went and spent basically all of their money for like the next 4 years to get a team that was Peyton proof, so to speak, to make sure that Peyton Manning could not be the reason that they lost the big game again. And so they wanted to say, you know, he's our quarterback, we trust him, but we don't want him to have to win it for us. And you go back and you talked about it earlier, you know, Drew Brees and Peyton Manning, and Manning had like the number one or two defense that year in Indy. So, you know, I don't even think that's a great example. But Drew Brees and Peyton Manning are really the quarterbacks, when you look at it, that, you know, were the epicenter of their team. Now, granted, you know, Tom Brady is great. He's been the epicenter of that whole franchise for the past, you know,
but they've evolved so much over
time.
But
yes, they have changed who they are numerous times, and in order to adapt and evolve. And I think, you know, I think that's a similar thing to what Arizona's going to need to do this offseason. And I think, you know, the reports coming out were that who was it? I'm sorry. Kime and Arians huddled, you know, on the plane ride home about what can we do in 2016 to get better and not have this happen again. And honestly, I think it still happens if they lose a close game, a nail biter, but I don't think that's the reaction if it's a close game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I think they're lamenting chances and opportunities, and they're going, man, if, you know, because even though you can't do anything about it, you look back and go, man, if we would have called this play differently, or, you know, if this guy would have made this tackle. There really wasn't that point. You know, you can kind of point the Peterson muff punt, but then they made a play right after that, so maybe not. I don't know. You know, like, I didn't feel like there was a one point in time where you said, this is why we lost. It was just, like you said at the beginning, it was the entire team, the entire, you know, the entire game, and it was just the worst possible you know, amalgamation of all those things at one time. And I think what it's going to do is it's going to force Arians and Kime to sit back and look at the team as constructed and say, all right, I know what we got to do. We got to make sure that we don't put that pressure on Carson Palmer next year. You know, he's the quarterback, live or die with him, but we're not going to go, well, Carson, we're only getting to the Super Bowl if you throw us there. So I think that's where, you know, it's going to head based off, you know, kind of everything we've heard in the last 2 days.
Another thing with Paul, kind of wanted to share, you know, I come off as a Carson Palmer apologist. I come off, I think, almost always as a player apologist in total, because in part my experience with covering the NFL has been able to see them more than just through my TV. And so I've gotten to see these players as people, and I am a people defender and I am a player defender when it comes to when you attack them as human beings like that. But here's the thing around the Carson Palmer. I have a few theory. Well, mainly it goes around this. Carlson, Parson Palmer in his career, like, to produce the numbers that he did all season and to play at this incredibly high level he did there, again, record-setting, best quarterback you have ever seen as among the Cardinals, it took optimal settings. They had a solid defense. They had a scheme. They had the skill players and an upgraded offensive line. And so you kind of took away, you know, Carson Palmer, anytime in his career you look at his numbers, when he's not pressured or when he's able to set his feet, is elite. You had a number of things. He could kind of a rhythm quarterback, but at a higher level. You know, not like Matt Hasselbeck type of rhythm quarterback, not like even a Kevin Cobb rhythm quarterback. But he needs rhythm, and he is streaky. What we saw at the end of the year were a couple of things. One, inside his head, there's the pressure in his mind where he knows in his mind the Cardinals succeed because he plays well. Then you've got this finger, the banged up finger. I am certain there is a little conspiracy going on. That finger affected it. I wouldn't be surprised that finger was broken. And he's played through it since then, because while his finger did not affect his interceptions necessarily, or most of them, the ball placement changed after that. He did play well against Green Bay in the regular season, but really ever since that point, the accuracy was a little bit off. And then, you know, another part I mentioned on Twitter last night, as if I'm trying to come up with more excuses, and I had completely forgot about this. This is something that no one mentioned. And as family men, we can kind of attest to this. I don't know how much of a mental effect that the whole home situation. Carson was across the country on Sunday with a wife at home who's 38 weeks pregnant. Now, yes, they have everything planned, but in the psyche of a father, of a human being who loves his family, as we've seen from Palmer, that is an added stress. So you took a player who performs at an optimal level when you have optimal circumstances, and you added a few monkey wrenches. You added the adversity of some physical teams. You had the Green Bay team motivated to get revenge. Just a Panthers team that is incredibly physical and starts very, very quickly. And then you add the finger, which clearly had something to do with some of his throws. And then you add on top of that the stress at home. And, you know, you add that up and you've got the Carson Palmer mess. Now, I don't know how much the finger affected it, but I'm going to tell you guys, the finger affected something, whether it was just simply his psyche and how he approached his throws, because he is very, very meticulous about his mechanics. And that's how I see it, that he, you know, the finger was one of many things, and that includes what's between his head, between his ears, affecting that play.
Yeah, I think that all kind of goes together to what we said earlier. You don't want to say the game's too big, because it's not.
It always hurts me to say that, because it feels like it's you're making them less of a person. It was just.
But the moment was so big, and like you said, there's outside influences, there's the finger, and there's the fact that, you know,
nobody else stepped up.
Yeah, well, not just that, but let's be honest. Like, guys know. You know what I'm saying? Like, guys know they have reputations. You know, Patrick Peterson heard what people said about him last year. Why do you think the diabetes thing came out? You know, why do you think, you know, this year was so important to him? You know, Darnell Dockett clearly hears what people say. Guys know.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and Carson Palmer knows. Carson Palmer knows that he's viewed as a very good regular season quarterback, but a guy that you just can't trust. A guy that doesn't, you know, that folds in the big moment. And that, you know, that the saying that there's playoff Palmer, that's there for a reason. And I think that goes to it too. Like, all of that, and it boils down to 60 minutes, and that's your legacy? Like, that's your legacy, right? Yes. Like, his legacy is now playoff Palmer, you know?
Well, look at Jake DeLome. You know, yeah. People forget. He was so close to win. He matched Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, essentially, in heroics. And what do we remember? The playoffs and the five turnovers, the five interceptions against the Cardinals, and how that just ruined him. That's what people remember about Jake DeLome.
Yep, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if you don't think that was in Carson Palmer's head, and you know everything else that Jess brought up, then you know these guys, like Jess said, these guys are human, and all of that was there to affect what happened. And like you said, I think the confidence and the belief that everything was going to be okay was there, and then the game started, and they got punched, and then they just could never recover. And it was just from there, you know, everything spiraled out of control because he was trying to make plays, and, you know, nobody else was making plays, and then a play was made, and he felt like he had to make, you know, match the big – so it was just too much. And in reality, you know, his – it, you know, it is what it is. He is, he's playoff Palmer still. Like, that's the unfortunate
he
reality.
Still is, and I think he can come back from that based on what we've seen in his career with the Cardinals. He takes a step forward and he learns from it. But here's something to talk about. You know, we've talked about Palmer. Palmer fell down. Palmer stumbled. He tripped. He fell. He soiled, you know, every bad metaphor you could come up with, but he absolutely had no help from anyone else. There wasn't a single big name on that team that stepped up. Dwight Freeney didn't have any opportunities, did nothing. Calais Campbell was invisible. Rashad Johnson missed tackles everywhere. Justin Bethel looked like he hadn't played corner at all. Patrick Peterson looked like a 2014 Patrick Peterson. I don't know when, and Larry Fitzgerald dropping passes. You can't hit me. This was clutch dropping more passes in one game than he did the entire season. It was just such disappointing across the board. And, like, how much can we, I mean, if we're going to pie chart, you know, is the term that Jay Burns likes to use, if we're going to pie chart blame in terms of star players, I think we have to look at Palmer first and give him the bulk, at least half of the blame. But Calais Campbell did nothing. And, you know, the thing that Bruce Arians kept saying about him, he didn't show up in all the games and he disappeared. He disappeared as Palmer did in a game where they needed him to dominate at the line of scrimmage.
I think the blame goes about 33% Palmer. You know, I think you spread it around, then I think you can go the other 33% with the trenches on both sides, you know, the front seven of the defense and the offensive line. And then I think you split the last part up, and I know, you know, at 17%, the skill positions on offense and defense, and I think the last 17% kind of goes to coaching. I think it has to be spread equally. Like, you don't just get pummeled like that and you're prepared, right? Like, I just don't feel like that's a possibility. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
And yeah, it looked like they weren't prepared. It looked like that they thought that Carolina wasn't as good as they are. The you know, clearly Carolina came out ready to prove something. Cam Newton was as good as advertised. Their receiving core, which is supposedly terrible, tore them apart. I mean, Philly Brown and his 100-plus yards, Ted Ginn, who had something to prove. And here's a couple of things that have gone unmentioned. There were at least two plays where I saw Jerrod Powers make a business decision to stop pursuing. One was on the first Cam Newton touchdown. He, you know, could have tried to be. He held up when there was a defender there to perhaps make a block. I saw Jerrod Powers make at least two, you know, business decisions to stop on a play. And, you know, really everyone disappointed on that defense. I don't think there was a single player that stood out as playing well. That and, you know, the offense, the right side of the offensive line just got blown off the ball. David Johnson had some moments. David Johnson looked great. J.J. Nelson looked good. Drew Butler looked good. And, yeah, and that was about it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I think it's fair to spread it everywhere. You know, you can – it's easier to point out the three or four guys that played well, right? Like, than who was to blame for the game. So I think that's a more fair way to do it. And I just think, you know, when it's all said and done, and I said this last week when we did this podcast to preview the show, I really thought everybody was underestimating Carolina. Clearly, I even underestimated them.
We all did.
You know, I saw all week the talk of, well, the Cardinals have, you know, the Cardinals have the receiving core. And look at how garbage the Panthers' defensive backs are. Man, I'm here to tell you what. If you have a disadvantage on the offensive and defensive line, and the Cardinals did, you're going to lose probably 75 to 80% of the time.
And we've talked about this a number of times this season. The Cardinals' defense was sort of exposed for what it is. They do not play nearly as well when they are behind and having to stop leading. They are a good run-stopping team that when a team can consistently stay with the run, they wear down. And this defense just was, I mean, nothing worked for them. And it's basically gone all season where the offense has been able to shoulder the load. Now, that's a change past couple of years. But the defense played well because of how the offense played. And when the offense wasn't there, as we saw it against Pittsburgh, we saw it against St. Louis, when the offense isn't there, the defense doesn't look nearly as special. And that's something, saying something, because they were one of the best defenses in the league.
But they're also a front-running
defense.
That's exactly something you and I have talked about before.
And they're a front-running defense that doesn't have the pass rush, and that's what makes a lot of those other front-running defense so elite, is because they can get to the passer, and they weren't able to do that.
Yeah, and that's a problem that we've talked about all along. And, you know, and I think when we boil down everything, and, you know, when this era ends, and, you know, if that's next year, and, you know, or if that's in 2 years when Palmer's, and I'm talking the Palmer era, you know, don't think I'm talking the Arians era or anything like that, but I'm talking the Palmer era ends. When we boil it down, I think we're going to look back at the Jonathan Cooper draft and the DJ Humphries draft and go, we could have had guys that impacted the game now. And I know that Cooper's started out as a freak injury, but let's be honest, he got replaced by probably the worst guard in the NFL in Ted Larson. So performance became an issue. But, you know, and DJ Humphries, and I don't care if DJ Humphries, unless they win a Super Bowl, I don't care if DJ Humphries becomes an all-pro right tackle. Like, you can't tell me that getting a Preston Smith, you know, at 24 in 2015 wouldn't have more of an impact than getting a DJ Humphries who didn't play a down, who wasn't even active. And that's not a shot at DJ. Like I said, he could be great next year, and that's fine. But that doesn't change the fact that, you know, it could have made the difference in 2015. And I don't think just Preston Smith would have made the difference, so don't take that as what I'm trying to say. But saying in general, like, if you have impact players in that first round of those drafts, if you get three Deion Buchanan impact guys on defense or offense or whatever, you can't tell me that there's not a difference.
Exactly. Now, let's move forward just briefly, as we're going to talk a little bit. As we're, you know, this has been our longest show in several weeks, as we already passed the hour mark. But let's talk about the Super Bowl. The Cardinals are done. So you've got Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton, dabbing on everyone. The very, very emotional, fun team to watch, and infuriating if you're my age or Seth's age or older. They're a team that just make you frustrated, because they embody everything about a younger generation that a lot of us older, particularly myself, find annoying. Then you've got Peyton Manning, what could be, as he said to Bill Belichick, his last rodeo. You know, I personally thought there was no chance. I thought it was virtually impossible for Denver to make the Super Bowl over and to beat Tom Brady and that Patriots offense. They proved wrong. And I'm looking at the Super Bowl and saying, there's no way that Denver can keep up with this Carolina offense, or that Denver's offense can do anything against the Carolina defense. That's my initial thing, but now I'm definitely personally, as much as I'm big Peyton Manning fan. I've always been of the opinion the Cardinals can't win the Super Bowl. I want Peyton Manning to get all the rings. I mean, and so I want him to get a ring. And it would be funny for him to get his second ring, which is kind of crucial in quarterback terms and legacy, in a year where he was bad. But at the same time, I like Cam Newton. He's a good kid. He plays football like he has fun. He's really good. And the number of people, the amount of hate there was towards him coming out of the draft, of talking about his bust, and he's just not done nothing but make get better and be better at his position and raise his team up. You know, the leadership issues, there's no question about his leadership now. For me, as some of the antics, I don't love how he dabs, that sort of thing about the generation that I hate. You know, I see all the time from teenagers and even my son where they do that all the time for no apparent reason. I just find that annoying. But Cam Newton, I like the Super Bowl. I like the Super Bowl, and if I can take the whole part where I'm bitter about the Cardinals not being in it, it's really a fun Super Bowl.
It is, and I love watching Cam Newton play. I think he's probably the best football player, pure football player, in the NFL at this point, which is fun to see. Like, he's a generational talent. I saw some comments on Revenge of the Birds that, you know, oh, it'll, you know, it'll slow down eventually. Dude's in his fifth year,
and he's like, not even close to his ceiling talent wise. Oh my gosh.
And he's still taking those hits. It's not going to make a difference. Like, that's what he is. He's a physical specimen. He's bigger than, you know, all of the Cardinals starting outside linebackers, right? Like, yes. So let's not act like his size is a, you know, or, you know, his style of play is not, you know, something that can continue, because, well, he's played for 5 seasons, so, and I think he's only missed like 4 games, so.
Yeah, he's built, it's as if the Cardinals were playing Darren Fells at quarterback. Really,
yeah, exactly.
Jermaine Gresham in terms of physical specimen. It's just absurd. And the thing is, he still has things to learn as a passer, but he's still a good passer. And he's got a coaching staff that's really, and a scheme that has really maximized his ability. But even still, he's had to learn and get better. It's going to be incredible to see how he continues to develop, because there will come the time when he has to become more of a traditional passer, and I don't think he's going to have a problem doing it.
No, I don't think so either. But, you know, when you talk about the Super Bowl, I'm going for the Bros simply because I would like to see Peyton Manning retire, one, but two, go out on top. I think that would be fun. As a Cardinals fan, I hate to say it, but I feel like this Panthers team is kind of set up for a long haul, right?
And they get Kelvin Benjamin back next year.
Ooh. Yeah, and they're going to draft another weapon, although they've proven that you really don't need to spend a ton of money or value on positional players.
Well, especially when he becomes, you know, by nature, and you've talked about this a little bit on and off on Twitter, when you have the type of threat that he is, you take a defender away from out of the passing game because you have to account for him.
Yeah, and I thought that was, you know, we can talk about this later, but I thought that was one of the mistakes the Cardinals made, is I felt like they treated him too much like a special quarterback, because he is, instead of saying, you know what, screw it, like, beat us passing. Like, if you beat us running, you beat us running, but we're going to make you throw the football. I felt like it should have been, 5-6 man blitzes all day and said, beat us with your arm. And they just didn't do that. That's another conversation for another day, but that's just, you know, that's how I felt on that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a fun matchup to watch, because I think you're going to see the probably the best defense in football in the Broncos against the best offensive line and quarterback and running game in football. And so it's just going to be a lot of fun. You've got, you know, obviously the dominating Panthers front seven. Hopefully Thomas Davis is healthy and back and ready to go, because you want to see both these teams as full of strength as they can be. And, you know, in the end, I honestly don't know who wins. Neither outcome would shock me. The only outcome that would shock me is if we get another Panthers blowout win. And that's not a shot at the Panthers. I'm just saying, like, you got to come back down to earth at some point, right?
Maybe. Well, that'll bring us to the end of our final lament or eulogy of the Arizona Cardinals season, as their season came to a close in the NFC Championship game, falling 49-15 to the Carolina Panthers. We've talked about Carson Palmer a lot, but thanks for listening. That'll wrap up our show. We'll be back next week. I think that's the plan. We'll talk next week, and we will get into off-season mode for the Cardinals, and we'll talk about position, you know, grading the positions. We'll look at the potential free agents that the Cardinals have. We'll look at positions of need, and then we're going to start leaning on Seth a little bit more, because that'll be sort of be draft time, and so we'll just have him talk a little more draft things, and I'll talk a little less, because I still have a whole lot to learn about the prospects out there. I'm so wrapped up in the regular season that, you know, off-season stuff is a far cry from my mind. But we're hitting off-season mode, so thanks for listening, if you're still listening. This has been another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. You can download the show, Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or simply by going to RevengeBirds.com. Be part of the site. Be part of the conversation. And thanks for listening.
Have a great night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.